time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Jim Gettler. Jim Gettler is a nonprofit consultant, community organizer, and national political activist. For more than 20 years, he has been advising a wide variety of nonprofit organizations, ranging from local arts organizations to major music and arts festivals, to long-term care facilities, to political campaigns. He is a former board member for several nonprofits, including Seattle Events, the Washington State Alternative Artisans Guild, Reclaim the Media, and the Northwest Community Partnership, as well as being a past president of the board of the Seattle Folklore Society. And he's the author of two books on the topic of nonprofits and has recently been working with a number of nonprofits interested in applying for a low-power FM license in the recently announced opening scheduled for October 2013. Jim, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Well, thank you. It's been a long time since I was here. I think a number of years ago I was in this very studio.
Yes, I'm good to be back. We corralled you back in.
That's good.
So you've been working with several groups on a low-power FM. Talk about low-power FM.
Well, low-power FM is probably the most exciting thing I've seen come down the pike in a long, long time. I never know where to start in talking about it, so I guess I'll start maybe where I first learned about it. Maybe 12, 13 years ago. Let me start with the radio dial. Let's start way back at the very beginning.
Well, when they had dials.
When they had dials. And you tune the dial in, you tune the thing, you tune your stations in, and you'd hear that fuzzy sound between the stations and so on. That's what we used to call analog. And there's a whole long reason for it. I'm not going to get into the technical weeds on it, because the more I talk technical, the less I realize I know. Basically, we had a time when channels had to be separated. There had to be, 90 and then a 90.3 and 90.6, 0.8, and so on. Because you had to have that separation or the channels would quite literally bleed together. And where you thought you were listening to one station, all of a sudden would bleed out and you get another station. Things weren't very precise. And then in the mid-late 1990s, the digital age came about. And suddenly you could tune a radio frequency in and be exactly where you wanted it to be. So it was 88.1. It meant 88.1. It didn't mean 88.1 plus a little, minus a little. It really meant precise tuning, which is really cool. In the late, I guess around 2000, the rules were changed, or they tried to change the rules for FM. And all stations are licensed. You have to get a license from the Federal Communications Commission to operate a legal FM or AM radio station. This station, for instance, is licensed, I think, to the university, if I'm not correct.
University of Washington.
The University of Washington owns the license. They don't own the air. They don't own the airspace. They own the frequency. The frequencies are determined by people. They sit around a room. They determine, how this is going to work. So this frequency is owned by the University of Washington, and it is managed by the University of Washington. So what happened is around 2000, they realized that we could change these frequencies a little bit and we could allow more people into the playground, basically. More people would be allowed to participate and have radio stations. It wouldn't be limited to the big boys, those with, the NPR stations that, with 90,000 or 150,000 watts, that we could open up this field a little bit. And then around 2001, if my memory serves, the National Association of Broadcasters and NPR, or National Petroleum Radio, as I refer to it, decided that this low-power FM thing was bad. What they were really saying, it was going to jeopardize their membership base and pry their advertisers, and a lot of money was on the table. And they circulated a CD to all the members of Congress that showed how terrible the interference would be if a low-power station was allowed to operate anywhere near a full-power station. Now, the reality is, it was nonsense. It was total, complete gibberish. But members of Congress, being members of Congress, have a million things in their plate. The National Association of Broadcasters delivers you a CD and says, listen to this. This is terrible. They voted down the changes in the law that would have allowed low-power FM to happen in 2001 or thereabouts. I remember I was working at a station at the time, and we were hoping that the law was going to change, and it didn't change. So in the interim years between 2001 or two, and now, which is 2013, a lot of people around the country, and I mean thousands of people around the country, testified before hearings that were held by the FCC in various cities. Almost every major city had a hearing where the FCC commissioners came, and they were really cool, and they listened to the people in the community, And the community may have been made up of artists. It was political organizers. It was church people. It was gardeners. It was really nice because it was everybody. It wasn't the stereotypical organizer, you know, with the black jacket and a briefcase. What happened then was in about 2 years ago, the Congress came to its senses and realized, wait a minute, these low power people aren't going to be the end of the world. It might just work. That we could actually open up the bands of FM and allow the community stations an opportunity, the community rather, the opportunity to have radio stations. Then in this, okay, this went on for about 2 years. They had to revise the rules, blah, 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 and they had to rewrite the way that licenses would be distributed to low power stations, community groups. They decided that they would limit it to nonprofit organizations or to government entities. Nonprofit, no ads. They would limit the frequencies to 100 watts. I'll get to that in a minute, why that's not, why it's both a good thing and a bad thing. And that they would have, that would apply by all the rules. It was the same rules that apply to a full power station, including the 7 words you can't say on the radio. All those rules apply. You keep a log. I mean, everything is identical except the power is much less. Then on November 30th, 2013, that November N30 for those paying close attention.
2012,
this year, the FCC issued the rules. And the rules basically are good. You won't hear me say that a federal agency has issued good rules very often, but I'm saying it now, so write it down. What they've said is that the channels, there will be more channels available. In techno jargon, it means second channel is now available, which means that between 80.1 and 80.3 or 80.4, you have 2 and 3. So instead of having to jump 4 channels, you can jump 2 channels. Because again, remember I said we have digital, which means if you turn in 80.2, it means you're going to get 80.2. So we have what's called second channel separation. That's a really good thing. That means in a major metropolitan area, even like Seattle, there may be as many as 9 new frequencies available. That's a big deal. If you live in a rural area or a small town, you may have a dozen or two frequencies available to you. That's a really big deal if you live in a small town. If you live in an area with many farm workers, for instance, folks who move through, if you have an area that just is underserved by the big radio stations, this is a tremendous development. The second thing they've allowed is they've allowed what's called a translator or a repeater. And that means your 100 watts suddenly doubles, which is really great, which means instead of a 5-mile area or a 10-mile area, you might have as much as a 20-mile area your signal is going to carry. That means you can cover a whole city. Think about it. So you have a dozen new stations in metropolitan areas. This suddenly becomes real. The third thing, which is I like as a community organizer, is that they score the applications, and I'll get to that in a minute, by points. You get X number of points for being a nonprofit, obviously. But then you get points for who in the community is involved. Is public safety involved? Are the public safety folks involved? Is there a collaboration among other competing interests involved? They want to see that. They want to see you can work together, that you can monitor your own playground, that the FCC doesn't have to come in and say, well, we have, you know, 4 applications. What are we going to do? How are you going to force you to share? Or have they come in and saying, we will share before we talk to you? So that's a really good thing as well. So we got 3 things out of the deal. It's pretty cool. I think that the possibilities are amazing. And so that in a nutshell is low power FM. I should say that once we have the gear for low-power FM, there's all the, like I'm sitting in a studio right now with microphones and sort of computers, I don't know what they do, and boxes and electronic stuff. Once you have the gear to transmit by low-power FM, you also have the very same gear to transmit or to broadcast on the web. So you suddenly have complete ability to take back your media. You then have radio and web, which means podcasting or streaming, available to you using the same gear. And it means you can finally take your message to the folks. That's pretty cool. How's that for a short answer?
All right. So what, in addition to a nonprofit, then what other hurdles are there? You talked about equipment.
Yeah. Well, the first thing is to get, if you don't have a nonprofit, and I'm going to get down to what I do a lot of. If you are a nonprofit organization, you got one foot in the door. If you can work with 2 or 3 nonprofit organizations, you suddenly open the door completely, and you can then obtain fill out the application. The application is very complex. It's not just who you are, where you live. It gets down to the technical details of where you would locate the transmitter so as to not have any interference for other stations. The biggest hurdle some groups will find is that they're not a nonprofit. Well, that's okay. We can work around that. You can be umbrellaed by another arts or by another organization. In other words, if you do art and your group makes art, or you do music and you're not anything but a bunch of people who do music, if you can locate a nonprofit who is also doing music or doing art, and they will do what's called umbrella you, and it's perfectly legal. Their bylaws would have to say they can umbrella other organizations. You can then have a legal arrangement with that organization to basically do the work for them or on their behalf. That may be a complicated way of saying it, but it's umbrellaing your project under an existing nonprofit. That is a really great way to go on many levels. It requires some legal documents between yourself and the sponsor. But once you have that, you would be a self-regulating, self-operating organization under the auspices of an existing nonprofit and therefore qualified for the first requirement for a low-power station, which is that you be a nonprofit or work, you know, you be through, working through a nonprofit. The other way to do it is as a public if you are a public agency, you can apply straight up. I'm suggesting that small radio stations, especially in small towns, partner with a public safety entity, the cops, the fire folks. They're probably not going to want to have a program, or they might. But the point of it is when they need to talk to the people directly, that's a way to do it. If there's icy roads, you know, if there's a bad car wreck on, you know, State Highway 154, the easiest, most direct way to reach people is through that radio when they flip it on in the morning with their morning coffee. So that's one way to partner. That's a partnership which makes a lot of sense and will be viewed very favorably when the review comes up by the FCC, when your application goes in with all the others. So the partnering, I cannot stress strongly enough the need to partner with other organizations that you may be working with or know about. In my perfect world, of course, I'd see, you know, cities having arts collaborations of a dozen arts organizations joining together to make one application. Likewise, a dozen public interest, political junkies getting together and agreeing to work together, not on their own operations, but for the purpose of obtaining a low-power application, or filling out the low-power application. It would be a very strong application, regardless of where you are. Now, I know this. We're streaming out on the interwebs, I believe. Mm-hmm. So wherever you are in the country, this applies. Whatever city you're in, if there are, a dozen festivals or arts organizations that might want to work together, pool your resources. It need not be expensive. One of the first two or three questions, always, what's it going to cost? What's it going to cost? It can cost almost nothing. You can get a lot of the equipment on the scrounge. There is no application fee for a low-power FM license. If you get an FM license, a full power, I think they're auctioned off or something. And these are where you hear stories of college radio stations being sold for millions of dollars. Well, that doesn't apply here, okay? There is no application fee, none. The application is going to be open in October for 10 days, from October 15th through 10 days, 25th.
October next year.
October of 2013, I'm sorry. So that's the time window. What was I talking about? Oh yeah, the collaboration. So if you can get these groups to work together, the main fee or expense at this point is going to be the engineer. You may have to pay an engineer, and you may have to buy a manila envelope to send the application to DC. Those are the only expenses you have between now and October 13th, is that engineer. Then, when you want to, if you're looking at me, I've got some notes on my laptop here because I wanted to make specific, make sure I was with this. The timeline, this is going to affect money too, so you know, is that between now and October 15th, you're not going to have a whole lot of expenses. You're going to have to buy a lot of coffee for a bunch of community meetings. You have to rent a church basement somewhere so you can have a room. Then, at October of 2013. The application window opens up, and that's when you send the thing. I think you can send it in electronically. X number of months after that, let's just say 6 months after that, would be April of 2014. The FCC will probably announce who did and did not receive the frequencies. In October of 2015, or 18 months after the announcement of the successful applicants, you need to be on the air. So they give you 18 months after they say you got your license to go on the air. That's 3 years from now. If you can't raise a couple $1,000 to buy yourself a transmitter in 3 years, you know, something's wrong. So what I'm saying is that the window is enormous. The length of time is wonderful. I compare it to having a baby. You know, you have plenty of time. You freak out, and then you realize, oh, wait, we've got plenty of time to figure this out before the next thing comes up. And then we've got to freak out and figure that one out. Same exact idea. So the money, you know, is for internet next to nothing. You can get, you know, free software. I just gave away 2 laptops on FreeCycle. I mean, computers are not expensive anymore. The gear, I'm telling folks to have about $10,000, give or take. And that's on the scrounge. That's getting things on the scrounge. That's, you know, finding carpenters to build fancy tables and so on. And then getting gear that is good quality. Budget $10,000. Again, you have 3 years. And if you do this right with a collaboration of a number of organizations, you know, no one's writing one check. It's a lot of people writing small checks. So, you know, it's completely doable. Where was I? I don't remember.
What about the actual antenna? Is that...
The antenna is kind of cool, actually. The rules for low-power FM are that the antenna has to be 100 feet above grade, above the ground. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out where you want the high point in town, if you can get it. And it's 100 feet. The translator or the repeater for the secondary signal that will go out is also 100 feet. So these are not intrusive antennas by any stretch. You can put them, I mean, there'll be details. Wherever you are in the country, I mean, your specific details are going to be different. Ideally, if you know someone with a plot of land and will let you put a 100-foot tower on it, that's your spot. But that's going to be very site-specific, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be dependent upon exactly where you are. I'm working with an organization in Oregon where it's a big field, or it's a festival, but it's a, you know, big open space. Not a problem. If you're in a congested urban area, maybe a problem. So I say, you know, figure it out. There's always a way through the maze. So the trick is to figure it out and figure out how to place that antenna.
And then the repeater antenna, because that wasn't available before.
Correct. And that was a huge thing that was added to the rules when we saw them on November 30th, was the ability for each LPFM applicant to have a repeater. That is great. What it is, it's all these unused frequencies that are out there. You know, when you listen to full power FM station, you realize you can hear this darn thing, you know, 50 miles from where you thought you were, where it was based. What it is, they got little antennas out there. You don't even see them. And they're sending the signal from one antenna to the next antenna to the next antenna. So as you drive down the freeway, you keep that signal all the way for 100 miles. Well, low power FM is not going to have that kind of juice, but it will be able to boost that signal beyond the initial 10 or so miles from the primary transmitter. What this means is you can cover some serious territory, bottom line is. And again, these are things which will be figured out by your engineer. I strongly urge people not to get too speculative, if that's a word. Don't try to guess where exactly everything's going to be. Let your engineer do that. There are engineers available. You can find me. I can hook you up with some folks who are very much part of our community. It's not an expensive proposition. We're talking $100 or $2 for an engineer to do the analysis, to figure out where, first of all, see if, and then where your transmitter should be placed. Getting the weeds a little bit, I want to read something before I held on my paper here. If you are in Seattle, now if you're not in Seattle, I suggest, you know, dig around on the Google a little bit, but in Seattle, I got this email about a week or two ago. There's going to be a community meeting about low power. It's called the Low Power Community Radio Opportunity, and it's being hosted by Brown Paper Tickets, which means it's pretty cool. Okay, I'll just read this because it's kind of important if you're in Seattle to like tune into this thing and make it happen. Brown Paper Tickets will host an information session for nonprofits to cover low power community radio opportunity at Langston Hughes Performing Arts Center, 104 17th Avenue South in Seattle. The event is produced by Brown Paper Tickets in partnership with the Seattle Office of Arts and Cultural Affairs and For Culture. The information session will cover what this opportunity means for local nonprofits interested in learning more about the last wave of hyper-low-power community radio signals. Oh, by the way, this will be our last frequency opening in our lifetime, so step up. Topics will include what's possible with not only radio signal, but a studio with the potential to be a multi-platform community media hub, which is what I just said earlier, but they say it much better than I do. Basically, once you have the gear, you can seriously rock and roll, and your community suddenly has a voice. And that in itself is pretty darn cool.
Previously, who has garnered the largest share of low-power FM licenses?
Funny you should ask. I think it's like 90%, 92%. Or my kid says all statistics are, 87% of all statistics are made up on the spot. But this one holds true. 92% of all low-power FM stations are owned by fundamentalist Christian churches. Now, I have got nothing against a fundamentalist Christian church. I could care less. However, I do have a problem with folks hogging up the dial with basically the same message. So they will be applying en masse. I assure you they will not be having long-winded debates about the merits of low-power FM versus internet. They're not going to be arguing over what it costs and do we have $1,000 for this. They're going to get the applications filled out and they're going to get them sent in. I suppose in the perfect world, community organizations would partner with the churches. I see that happening sometimes. But that's who basically applies. And they are called, for lack of a better term, transmitters in a closet. They don't even have a studio. But if you do have a studio, I should say this, community groups that have studios get an extra point, which is part of the new rules. Is you get an extra point in the point scale if you have a studio open 20 hours a week. So if your studio, for instance, is in a community center, or your studio is in a public space of some sort, and it's really part of the community. I mean, it's actually got coffee cups and it's got frayed curtains and it's the real thing. You get extra points. The idea of that is to encourage community groups to do this, not to say that the transmitters in a closet run by the fundamentalist churches cannot do it, but saying to community groups, hey, you wanted this. You came out by the thousands in cities around the country saying you wanted this. You told us how you wanted it. Now do it, which I think is a pretty good response by the FCC.
So these transmitters in a closet are essentially like jukeboxes that are just...
Well, yeah, they're automated exactly. Automated transmitters that just take the programming developed by some dude's outfit in Southern Texas and he beeps it around the country. So it is a low power FM transmitter. They comply with all the rules, but they're not community as some of us. I have to be careful here. They're not community as some of us define community. Even the church, the local church, need not actually participate. All they're doing is they're rebroadcasting a canned signal. And that's where my prop is. If it's a real church doing real community programming, far out. I mean, go for it. I mean, do it. Bring the kids in. Teach them to make media. Teach them to run that board, because that's a skill. I mean, there's lots of things downstream that are good about working in a studio. If you're just taking canned content and spitting it out again, that's where I have a problem. So that's the idea of the point system, is to encourage people to have a real studio with real human beings, and real coffee cups, because that's real. That says you are really part of the community and doing your thing.
And since you've been working with groups on this over the years, what in terms of content do people need to focus on?
Sure. It's a good point. You can do almost anything you want. I mean, be honest with you. I make jokes about having radio shows about car repair. I mean, really local. One thing I should say is that for stations and organizations thinking about going low power FM as well as going internet streaming, remember using the same gear, I'm moving my hands around the radio, which doesn't do us a lot of good. Once you have the gear, you can broadcast and stream. Once you stream, though, a whole new set of rules come into play involving copyright. I'm not going to get into it too deep, but basically those who own the copyrights at the mega level, the major studios, have bought themselves a law that requires high royalties for things broadcast on the radio or on streaming. The way around that is to limit your programming, or not limit, but to encourage programming that is in fact local. Anybody can go anywhere to listen to pop top 40. I mean, there's no shortage of listening to your favorite band on the radio stations. There might be a shortage of hearing local songwriters, or hearing local poets, or hearing drums, or hearing the songs of your community that have never been copyrighted and have never been recorded per se. That gets around all of those rather onerous copyright rules, but also forces you to think in terms of your own community. Talk to your shopkeepers. Talk to the buskers, the street musicians down the way. That, in a roundabout way, encourages community radio by saying, okay, you don't have to pay those fees, but adjust your programming so that you don't have to pay those fees. Gone are the days of the pirate where we can just play this stuff and no one's going to know the difference because too many people are going to be watching this as time moves on. Now, right now, my guess is many people are hearing about this for the very first time. It's not going to make it into the corporate news, and NPR are not going to run positive stories about low-power FM because they're terrified that we're going to take away their subscriber base. So you're not going to hear it. I mean, they've had 30 years to develop their community, and they haven't done it. They got in bed with Archer Daniel, and they got in bed with the Gates Foundation, and that's where they are. They're happy. But that's not community. Now that communities can actually make their own content, they are going to be a little nervous. So don't expect them to be running positive stories about how to do this low-power FM thing. They don't have to worry about the royalty fees because they're making so much money because they're sponsored. It's not even an issue. They write a check. If you're a community group, you need to be aware of it. This is one reason I'm suggesting the arts organizations work together because between them all, they will have artists and they will have performers and artisans and speakers and talkers and just folks who can make wonderful programming, learn how to do the interview, learn how to mix a program together that makes sense, and bypass all those rules that mainly apply to the larger stations. But to content, you can do anything you want. I mean, you can sing, you can play music. Whatever you hear in your community is perfect radio at this level. It's absolutely perfect. If you want to talk to shopkeepers, do that. My joke is always the car repair. This is how to change a tire. It might be the most boring thing in the world to some people unless you need to know how to change a tire. And then suddenly, this is the coolest thing you ever heard coming over the radio. I'm working with a couple of tribes. They're getting into the storytelling side, especially tribes with a long oral tradition. To relay storytelling is amazing. And to do it at the local radio level is even more amazing. So these are the options and these are things that folks might want to think about. In the Pacific Northwest, we've got many tribes, many of whom have stations or are able to get stations. They've got between now, which is where are we now, first of the year, until mid-October to get it together. So that's a long time. And as I say, the first thing you got to do is fill out an application and send it in. And you got another 18 months or 2 years after that to actually get it together. So this is the time to plan, get that application together. You get the application on the FCC website. Oh, I wanted to give the Prometheus thing before I leave here.
We've got about a minute left.
Oh, my God. Okay, quick. Get on your internet. Go to the Prometheus Radio Organization. It's the most wonderful people doing wonderful, good work. www.prometheusradio. Come on, Jim, spell it. Prometheus Radio. PrometheusRadio.org. Good people doing good work. They got channel finders on their site. They got a lot of how-to help. They're nationally focused. Get a hold of me. Get a hold of me through the radio station here is the easiest way to do it. And I suggest do it and make it happen.
And then you can also, FCC has, of course, got tons of info available.
Yeah,
as well.
Go FCC. Just go FCC and then on their search thing, put in low power FM and it'll come up with tons of stuff.
All right. So, like you said, this is the most exciting thing you've seen in
ever.
In the last 30 years.
Easily, yeah, totally. Since I've been playing in media, this is the coolest thing to come down the pike.
All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
It's been cool. You might be back another couple years, will you?
or sooner.
All right. Thanks.
We've just been talking with Jim Gettler. He is a nonprofit consultant, community organizer, and national political activist, and working on Low Power FM. And you can find out more about Low Power FM at the Prometheus Radio website, which is prometheusradio.org.